You want to go to Cuba, obviously. Everyone wants to go to Cuba. You want to go to Iceland too, and Japan, and Sri Lanka, and probably Canada. Travel is like that. It's cyclical. It has fashions. Destinations become super popular, seemingly out of the blue. And, of course, they also drop out of favour. Remember Turkey? Everyone wanted to go there 5 years ago. Bali, too, is not quite the exotic hotspot it once was. Same with Thailand. These are countries that were once huge favourites for Australian travellers, and yet now they're out of fashion. It's not just destinations that change either, it's styles of travel that come into favour. It's interests that we travellers have. It's current obsessions with things like food and cruising. It's disdain for anything too touristy or cheesy. The things we do, the things we see, the ways in which we experience the world, they're always changing, always being reshaped. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're getting all fashionable. We're looking at what's hot and what's not. We're talking about the destinations that have boomed over the last 10 years and those that have slipped in Australian travellers' estimations. We're also going to look at the styles of travel that have become popular and pull out the crystal ball to discover the next big things. Joining me today are two big guns from the traveller.com.au desk who are going to help chat about this. First up, he's the editor of Traveller for Fairfax Media, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, Anthony Dennis. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks for coming along. And also, we have my longtime collaborator on Flight of Fancy, a traveller.com.au writer and passionate wanderer, Uta Juncker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. Thanks very much for coming along. Now, Anthony, why is travel such a cyclical thing? Why does it have fashions?
Well, I guess it's driven by our own changing tastes. And the more experience we get as travellers, the more discerning, hopefully, we get. Also, when countries throw millions of dollars on promotion at certain destinations, that can make a difference in terms of influencing where we go. But, sometimes it can just be a single hotel or an amazing hotel or an amazing attraction that can change the fortunes of a destination. It'll pop up in a US travel magazine or an Australian travel section, and then it'll take off from there. So it can be something big. It can be something small. Obviously, good old-fashioned word of mouth remains a big factor.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Uta, what do you think are the factors that contribute to a place becoming hot?
Well, obviously, all those things Anthony said, but I think it's partly what a destination is and partly what it's not.
Right.
So Iceland, for instance, magnificent landscapes, was on Game of Thrones, all super trendy, and it's perceived as very safe at a time when other destinations, travellers are starting to get nervous.
Yeah, world
about.
Events plays a big part as well, doesn't it?
So it's that sort of X factor. Or you have the Cuba thing, which is Cuba is what Cuba has always been, but suddenly the sense of change is in the air, so it's a get in before it changes. That can also
certainly happen. World events do influence people's choices. Scandinavia's really taken off as Europe, particularly Western Europe's come under a lot of pressure from events that we're all too familiar with from over the last few years. So
yeah.
It's not surprising that that our gaze has turned towards places like Iceland. And
it's interesting that Northern Ireland features just as heavily on Game of Thrones, but it doesn't seem to have the kind of groundswell of obsession that Iceland does.
Although Belfast went through a thing probably, about 10 years ago with the Titanic thing?
Yeah.
So it kind of had its moment where it had a spotlight on it.
Yeah.
It's probably not ready for it again yet.
What about the flip side when places fall out of favour? Is it a sort of natural backlash to places becoming too popular?
Well, I think if you have a trajectory, you go from being just maybe run-of-the-mill and then for whatever reason you get lifted up. And then if you're lucky, you become a standby. You become the blue blazer in the wardrobe that is like, that goes with everything.
Let's say, somewhere like Bali was seen as a really exotic, amazing destination maybe 15, 20 years ago. But obviously its popularity has changed the way people think about it. Everyone has been to Bali now.
Well, and I think part of the driver of travel is discovering something new. So when you've been, unless you're the type of traveller who goes to the same spot every year, in which case you might, Bali is the place for your August holiday and that's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you've done Seminyak, you've done Ubud, you've done the East Coast, and then you're naturally going to look for something else. You don't want to see the same thing.
Yeah.
So that is a bit of a turnover.
And I think particularly among younger travellers as well, there's a desire to be seen as being fairly adventurous and to go into these new hotspots rather than going back to the places that people have been to before.
Oh, being the first one to have a particular bar on Instagram is always a winner.
Yeah. Well, that is becoming a big factor. But the reality with Bali and other destinations is they become their own worst enemies because clearly Bali is overdeveloped.
Yeah.
There are so many growing environmental and social issues that it's going to have to confront. And for a intelligent traveller, that's when you start to get a little bit turned off and start to look at other destinations. There seems to be a groundswell growing against Bali as a holiday destination among a certain demographic. There is a perception it's getting too crowded, too overdeveloped.
But then overdevelopment is such a relative term because I was just in Iceland a couple of months ago and you can just see it starting to change where one of the beauties of Iceland has been, you know, whether you're seeing a geyser or a waterfall or whatever, you just drive there and walk up and there it is. And that's And now they're starting to build at some of the populous sites, they're starting to build public toilets, which is really good because we need public toilets. But you're going, and once you get the public toilet, then you're going to have the gate with the entry fee, and it's changing the nature of that experience. But that's inevitable.
Did you notice how she just dropped in the line
like
about,
that?
I was in Iceland the other day. Well, Venice is really on the brink, I think. They really need to make some urgent decisions about the future of Venice as a destination because there is a huge backlash.
Yeah, I mean, it's that classic thing of arriving as a tourist and complaining about all the tourists, isn't it?
Well, that's right.
What are all these other people
doing? That's right. It's always worth remembering that.
Yeah. So where is hot at the moment? Uda, where do you think is really on trend at the moment? Would you say, you know, Myanmar? I know that's a place that you're quite
passionate
about.
Myanmar's been riding a boom for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
But I think that's gone off the boil too, but partly because of
politics. Oh, we missed the moment for Myanmar?
Well, I think...
I was there 6 years ago, Dale, but for other people...
Yeah, of course you were. But I think the political issues around Myanmar have turned a lot of people off. I would imagine.
It does sense of exoticism that people are looking for in a new destination. How about Japan? That seems to have gone crazy in the last 10 years.
We seem to be having a bit of an Asian boom. I mean, Japan, Sri Lanka is another big one.
Right,
And Japan's actually a good one because Japan deals with the tourism numbers it gets. As a traveller experience, I think it's totally seamless.
I mean, there's already the spectacular infrastructure there because there's just so many people. You've already got this amazing public transport, great hotels, and, you know, that's just been used domestically for a long time.
An example of a place that can go from zero to, what's the expression?
hero, should we say? Yeah.
From zero to hero. But it really is a destination that delivers because it's it's incredibly stimulating, incredibly safe. It's very... female friendly, as long as you don't catch the subway at peak hour. We won't go into details, it's amazing the growth that Japan's achieved in even just the last 5 years.
And it's also fascinating how people are not just going to Tokyo and Kyoto. They're going to Osaka. They're going up to Hokkaido. They're doing all kinds of interesting things. There's long distance hikes. There's that beautiful new luxury train that you can't actually buy a ticket for because it's booked out for years.
And you probably can't afford it either.
Amazing culinary scene as well.
Oh, extraordinary.
I think that's a big factor. I think our growing understanding and appreciation of Japanese food has been a big factor.
Yeah.
But also I think the ski industry.
Definitely. Yeah.
The interest in skiing in Japan has... People have gone there to ski and then they've just been awakened by this amazing culture.
Yeah.
And I think that's my theory is that, they've done the skiing, but they've been so inspired, they want to go and see the rest of the country.
Yeah, I think
so that's another...
They've spent a day or two in Tokyo and suddenly realised, wow, this place is amazing.
Route. Or they've just gone skiing and they've eaten traditional Japanese cuisine. They've encountered the Japanese on the ski fields and après-ski venues. Mm. That's another example of how a destination can take off when you experience one aspect of it and it inspires you to explore the rest of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we touched on Cuba briefly before. It seems to have, in the last 5 years, it's been the sort of destination that everyone's talking about wanting to go to, isn't it? I guess there's that sense of urgency that you have to get there now before everything changes.
Because every single person who comes back is going, it's already changing, you need to go this week. And I mean, I've been known, not necessarily about Cuba, but I've been known to do that too, going, get there now. Get there now.
So what is it about Cuba? I guess it's the, you know, people have these visions of the vintage cars and the crumbling facades of Havana. Is that what gets people going?
I think that's the headline image that people have of Cuba, and that's very appealing. But, I mean, it's also a Caribbean island, you know, and it's got beautiful beaches and it's got some lovely old colonial towns. I mean, you know, Ben, what were your favourite parts of the country?
I mean, I've got a kind of a thing with Che Guevara. I'm really fascinated. I'm really fascinated by that whole story. And so kind of I sort of went along the trail of places that he went to, like Santa Clara, where they fought this final battle to win the revolution, and the Bay of Pigs area. And I find all that stuff fascinating, the history, as you say, coupled with the fact that it's a Caribbean island and there's these beautiful beaches.
And it's a time warp, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely.
So it remains a time warp. But what do you think appeals to Australians particularly?
I mean, in a way, I think people really don't know why they want to go there, in a sense. I think they just know that they want to get there because it's a time capsule, because everyone else is talking about it. It kind of takes over and becomes its own thing. It's like Cuba is just obviously a place that you want to go to.
What about bragging rights? Bragging rights, I think, are a big factor for places like Cuba to be able to say you've been to been to Cuba.
I think Laos in Southeast Asia used to have that as well. Mm. It was very much the place that all the backpackers wanted to get to. Mm. As a, you know, it's just a way of saying that I've got off the beaten track.
In Myanmar, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
I think that's a big factor for Australians. You know, you're going to...
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to spend a lot of time and a lot of money getting to
particularly
these places
in this age of Instagram and Facebook, where you can put up that hero photo of the vintage car in Havana and people automatically know exactly where you were.
Well, used to brag about these places at dinner parties, but I don't think anyone has dinner parties anymore. You just do it all on social media.
Yeah. But it's that arc, isn't it, where often the backpackers are the first ones in, and then, you know, a bit of infrastructure comes in, and then you get the more sort of urban travel, if you like, and then the families come a bit later. So it's this cycle that any hot destination goes through.
Yeah, that's true. And it seems like South America as a whole is becoming much more popular for Australian travellers, I guess because it's becoming cheaper to get to, do you think, Anthony?
Or? Yeah, and there's more air links there. But definitely the flights are a lot cheaper. But also a lot of operators are running tours to there from Australia. But I think the frequency and affordability of flights is obviously a big factor. And the Rio Olympics... mixed successes they were all round, and probably were a big factor as well.
Yeah, I think Machu Picchu, just that one site, seems to drive a lot of interest in South America.
Absolutely, and it's that cut-through thing again, because I think for so many years people were put off by South America. It was hard to get to, and they kind of knew there was Peru and Brazil and
probably
Argentina.
Probably a bit dangerous as well.
Probably a bit dangerous, and just kind of, I need to go do those countries, but I don't really know. Machu Picchu, easy sell, and then you go, okay, what do I build on from there? And we've now got a much better idea of what you do in Argentina, what you do in Brazil.
And Peru, hasn't it done a great job marketing itself?
It's gone from
being, you know, this obscure destination with just one attraction to somewhere that's really taken off.
Yeah, well, particularly for people who are into food, it helps that there's these amazing restaurants that everyone now knows about.
I think that's
there.
Been a huge part of it, the talk about Peruvian food. And you can see, you know, now they're getting, again, a luxury train. They've got the Belmonte Andean Explorer. And because it has so many destinations, Peru. You know, it's got like Titicaca, it's got Colca Canyon, it's got all these fascinating places.
Arequipa, Nazca Lines.
Yeah, so much to see. Mm. And people have got more awareness of that now.
But what about Turkey? I think Turkey's a really interesting country.
Poor old Turkey.
Because it was so popular and everyone wanted to go there, and then things just all started going
wrong. Did
you
see how quickly the cruise lines dumped Turkey?
Oh, no.
It was almost overnight. They removed all of their ships from itineraries. And it's really sad. It's such a fabulous destination.
Yeah. I mean, is it purely geopolitical issues that we're talking about?
I think it's safety issues first and foremost. I mean, they did this amazing job of selling themselves as a destination, again, with the diversity. You know, you had Istanbul, you had the coast, you had Cappadocia, you had all these great experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it's but it's not Europe. It's the Middle East, but it's not the Middle East.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's got a history that you can kind of sort of understand because it links, you know, with ancient Roman things, but it's got its own individual thing. And then just a few too many riots and shootings and bombings.
And the attempted coup probably pushed it over the edge, plus the very autocratic leader's reaction to it in
You had an attack at an airport. You had an attack at the biggest tourist sites in Istanbul. And, yeah, that just feeling that Turkey feels a little bit out of control.
It's such a shame. It's such a great
destination. And it's had a big impact on the Anzac Day celebrations, or commemorations, rather, as well. So, and that will probably continue in years to come.
Yeah. Now, what about some countries that are always hot? Perennial favourites. Australians love New Zealand. There just seems to be no end to our fascination with Kiwi land.
Keep telling the New Zealanders that because I don't think they know how much we love them.
I know. I don't think they do either.
New Zealand. It's really hard to quantify exactly what it is about it, but there is a strange X factor about New Zealand. It really does compete very well in the beauty stakes.
Yeah.
Especially South Island. That's extraordinary.
The first time I went to New Zealand when I was a kid, I was kind of expecting another Australia, really, because our cultures are pretty similar. And you get there and it's a completely different world. Yeah. You know, there's these amazing landscapes.
It's familiar enough to be comfortable, but different enough to be interesting.
Absolutely.
And the differences are actually quite marked. And, you know, and the landscape, the trees. There's not much wildlife.
No.
Not many mammals. In fact, I don't think there are any mammals. But native ones, at least. But the country is visually very, very different.
And the people are different. Safe and easy to get around.
Safe and easy. And the New Zealanders are the nicest people. I mean, it's my thing.
I mean, let's not go too far with our praise of Kiwis.
Let's not puff them up too much.
The thing about New Zealand, and some Kiwis hate it when I say this, but I do mean it. In the nicest possible way, the entire country is like one great big country town. Everyone's got time. No one's in a rush. Mm. Everyone's up for a chat.
There is a real community spirit.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But what about the coffee? I love the coffee in New Zealand.
Yeah.
That's a big plus.
That is something that Australians take into account when they travel now.
I know, that's right. As I always say, we've become the biggest coffee bores after the Italians in the world.
Right. I guess, obviously, people go for Queenstown. It's such a big destination in New Zealand. But what else is there? Wanaka, Nelson.
Fiordland? The sounds. Yeah. Everyone goes to Milford Sound, but Doubtful Sound, which is the next sound along to the south, is twice as big as Milford Sound. And hardly anyone goes there. And it's quite an adventure to get there because you have to go on a boat across a lake and then across a saddle on a bike. By road, and then you're there, and you've pretty much got it all to yourself. And it's the same with some of the other sounds. There's multiple sounds. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah,
You know, it's like what Chile and Norway and New Zealand are the only countries in the world with fjords.
Yeah,
and we've got one of those countries right next door, 3 hours away.
I guess it's what people love about New Zealand, isn't it? It feels like the Northern Hemisphere in a lot of ways. You know, the Alps seem familiar if you've been to Switzerland.
And they're real mountains, aren't they? Even though by world standards, they're still not as high as some of the mountains you get in Europe and North America and elsewhere, or South America. But they are fair dinkum, pointy, classic-shaped
spectacular
mountains.
Peaks.
The Southern Alps, flying across the Southern Alps is into Christchurch is on a clear day is a really amazing experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got the glaciers as well along the west coast of the South Island.
Yeah, yeah. Another. How about you, Uta? What have you enjoyed there?
Detail. I mean, the landscape's amazing, but I also think places like Wellington's a great little town. Bay of Islands in the north, heading up, I don't even know what it's called, but if you head up the coast from Auckland about 2 hours, there's beautiful, I mean, there's bits of beauty all around New Zealand. It's not hard to find.
Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. In a world where Google can show us anything at the touch of a button, it's easy to assume we know everything about everywhere. Easy, but wrong. Each year, Intrepid launches around 50 new trips. That's a whole lot of world to discover. From Azerbaijan to Zanzibar and just about everywhere in between, there's always somewhere new to explore. Start planning your next adventure at intrepidtravel.com. Now, I think we briefly mentioned Italy a second ago. Italy just keeps
on.
You
can't go wrong with
Italy. You can't. You can't. I mean, there's so much history and culture there, but also amazing food and a sort of diversity of attractions as well. It's not just Rome and Venice and Florence. It's Sardinia and Sicily and, you know, Calabria and all these other
and
places.
Puglia
as well.
All
yeah.
these beautiful. And that's something that's an example of a destination that, you know, Australians have developed a deeper knowledge of. So you're used to tick off the big cities, and now they're doing the historic cities of Sicily, or they're hanging out in Naples, you know.
Right,
or,
yeah.
Or
Naples actually is a good example. I love Naples.
Naples
it's fun.
Is a fantastic city. I mean, yeah. It's its own thing. It's not
it
for
is.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I have friends who went there and went, it's dirty and poor.
Yeah, I mean,
and
if you're looking
it's
for...
It's picturesque.
If you're looking for Florence or Venice...
So is India, but that would not be going to India.
I mean, I think if you like somewhere like Berlin or Barcelona, then Naples is your kind of place.
Absolutely.
You're going to enjoy it. It's got that kind of rough around the edges grit to it.
It's raffish.
It is, yeah. But in a charming sort of way.
Absolutely, and the food is so darn cheap.
Yeah.
Because it's not a big tourism destination, so...
Yeah. And Anthony, Puglia, what's going on there? It seems like all of my friends are in Puglia at the moment.
Well, I guess it's that regional hopping thing, isn't it? I was in Venice about a year ago, and we made a real effort to investigate the city beyond St. Mark's Square, and it was just so rewarding. We were inside churches with Titians and Tinerettos on the walls and on the ceiling, and we were the only two tourists there. Even in Italy, such a crowded tourism destination, you can still get away from the tourists if you make the effort. And I think, you know, as you grow as a traveller, you realise those there are those opportunities as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess travellers as a whole are changing the way that they travel. That's one of the trends that we were going to talk about, actually, is this idea that you can get off the beaten track and explore places that might be really well known, but you can sort of see a different side of them.
Well, I think that's going to become increasingly important in the next 5-10 years to how do you escape your fellow tourists, but at the same time do the right thing by the destination. I mean, Venice desperately needs people to spread out across the city. I mean, there are pockets of Venice where people don't actually benefit that much from
right.
tourism because
yeah.
there is this congregation in this one part of the city where because people want to tick the box. So, you know, it's tick a box tourism, isn't it? You know, how do you escape that? And I think that's going to be something that we're all going to be pursuing in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. At least thoughtful travellers are.
Absolutely, yeah. One interesting country, I think, which we would formally have put in the perennial favourite category would be France, which has maybe changed a little bit in the last few years in the way that people think about it. Have you found that, Uta?
I think Paris has taken a hit among travellers, but mm-hmm. At the same time, that whole river cruising thing has taken off in such a big way. I am constantly hearing people who have just come back from this river cruise or that river cruise.
Right.
And I think that's been that sort of provincial tourism. I actually think that's the most, much as I love Paris, that's the most majestic part of France.
Yeah.
I'm a big train fan, so I think travelling by train in France is great. I mean, the TGVs are just... How fantastic are they? And they
yeah.
can get you pretty much
the bullet
pretty
trains
much everywhere.
Of Europe,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. yeah. But also you get the slow local trains as well. But I agree with you, river cruising has opened up France to a whole new traveller and also, you know, particularly provided a focus on regional France that maybe didn't exist.
Now, are there any other destinations that have fallen out of favour, do you guys think? Anthony, I think the Arabian Peninsula was one that you mentioned. Is that...
Well, the Arabian Peninsula, it's a great euphemism for the Middle East, basically.
Yeah.
Well, that pocket of Abu Dhabi, Dubai,
right.
Oman.
Yeah, because, I mean, those are very popular.
Oman's hot. Oman's, yeah. In every sense.
Yeah.
That's an increasingly popular destination, probably because they've been so sensitive in not mimicking Dubai and Abu Dhabi, or Abu Dhabi to a lesser extent. But
yeah.
they've avoided all of the high-rise, preserved a lot of their heritage. But
yeah.
it's still a big challenge for Dubai and Abu Dhabi to get Australians to get off those planes
right.
and stay more than a night.
I think it's one of those places where you actually need a couple of trips there to find the things that you love about it. I've now been there quite a few times and I've found some amazing little pockets like Deira, which is the old city there.
Yeah, the old town.
Where
there's a great boutique hotel there as well.
There is, yeah. And there's some amazing
Unfortunately, you
food.
Get woken up at 4 a.m. by prayers.
Call to prayer.
Especially if you're in the room that I was in.
Well,
there's the place I had, it was really, really gorgeous. Her lovely little courtyard with a cafe and restaurant.
Yep.
Its own little shop.
Yeah.
Very close to the creek.
Yeah.
Great place to go and have a... a cruise at dusk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and because you have immigrants that are there from all around the Middle East, as well as India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, there's some incredible food there for very cheap. You know, people seem to think of Dubai as this place of celebrity chefs and the big five-star resorts, which it does have, but you can also get this really amazing cuisine from around the world for $2 or $3 a pop.
And it becomes a walking city in those areas, that old area around the around the creek, which it isn't elsewhere. Among all the high rises, heaven forbid, walking.
It's not a great walking city in some places.
It's like Los Angeles in the desert, isn't it?
Yeah. So what about countries that Australians have never really warmed to? I know there's a few that they've just never been hot but possibly should be.
I think it tends to be regions quite often, like Central America. You know, so many amazing things, whether you're into the jungles or the ruins or the beaches or the colonial cities. A lot of similarities with South America, and we're starting to get our heads around that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whether it's Costa Rica or Guatemala or Nicaragua, so many places, so hospitable, such a lot to see. And we just, again, I think it's that differentiation thing. We don't know which of them we'd go to, so we don't go to any of them.
Right, yeah. And I guess quite difficult to get to in a way, because you can't fly directly there. You have to go through South America or through North America. And it's just that little bit of extra effort.
It's a little bit extra, but if you're going to LA, it's actually quite an easy add-on.
Yeah, and it's no further than Europe, really.
And it's no further than Mexico.
I feel like cover story coming up.
What about you, Anthony? I know you mentioned Malaysia as a place that you don't really feel that Australians have really connected with.
No, not in the same way as Bali, but then I think it's really a real shame, because I really love Malaysia and visited there on many occasions. It's so diverse. You get just a great cross-section of colonial architecture, amazing food, as you know. Not a big fan of Kuala Lumpur, but love Penang.
Yeah,
Borneo,
yeah.
Kuching, one of the most laid-back cities in Southeast Asia. Gorgeous history and architecture there. I don't know why, but you don't hear Australians expressing huge amounts of enthusiasm like I just have around Malaysia.
Yeah,
Langkawi is, you know, I would argue is probably the thinking person's Bali in many ways.
As you say, I mean, it offers a lot of the things that other countries that we love.
Well, I mean, they say, you know, truly Asia, and it really is.
Right, yeah.
While we're in that neck of the woods, can I put in a plug for non-coastal parts of Indonesia, like Sulawesi, which is absolutely amazing, like Central Java. There are these fantastic cultural places that, when we do Indonesia, we tend to think of coastal things.
Yeah.
And
even anything outside Bali doesn't get a lot of love, does it?
Yeah.
But we haven't embraced Indonesia proper. But what's been stopping us, because it does... I mean, I haven't done Indonesia proper either, but it sounds amazing, especially the way you describe it.
Oh, well, because Sulawesi, I just fell in love with. I mean, the amazing tribal cultures there are just stunning. And again, beautiful trekking and... just this experience, it's so close to Australia. And that, which brings me to Papua New Guinea, which is the other one that I get really excited about. And I understand there are safety question marks, but it's one of those places that if you do it right, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, and it depends where you go with the security situation as
absolutely.
Well. If you go to Milne Bay, Alatau, it's pretty peaceful around there. Same with Rabaul.
Toofy, tropical fjords, some of the best diving and snorkeling around, you know, and of course... fascinating cultures, birds of paradise, jungle trekking. Amazing destination.
Yeah.
She was only there 6 weeks ago.
Just got back yesterday, I thought.
But what a shame, though, for Papua New Guinea not to address those security issues and those concerns that people have, because they could have a relatively small tourism industry that would really benefit their economy.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that we can't actually help them sort it out.
Yeah, I mean, there's
crying
all sorts
out
of difficulty.
For a tourism industry. You don't want it to become like a Bali, and it's not going to ever be that, I don't think, but it would just be great for their future if they were able to develop a proper tourism industry.
One of the great things about PNG is also one of the things that makes it difficult for them, I think, is that you have hundreds and hundreds of distinct tribes who all speak their own language, and so it's very difficult to kind of bring all that together.
And a lot of difficult terrain, obviously. That's why I mean, cruising, did you go on a
depends which trip you're talking about.
Right. Sorry. I knew I shouldn't have asked that question.
I've done a couple of cruises, and I've done some sort of sky hopping, if you like.
But even some of the mainstream cruise operators are now going to PNG, which is opening it up to a whole different type of traveller, which is really great to see.
Yeah. Now, what about styles of travel that are coming into fashion now?
Food.
Yeah. I mean, special interest travel in general, you know, architecture and sports
history,
and music
sports,
and history.
Yeah.
But food, obviously, is a big driver for Australians.
Yeah, it sure is.
I mean, basically, all you have to say when you come back from somewhere and they go, how was it? And you go, the food was amazing. And they're like, okay, great. When was it again?
Done deal.
But I think the fact that we're exposed to so many cultures in Australia makes us better travellers when we get to these destinations, even though when you go to a place like China, you realise that it's a country made up of huge number of regional cuisines, so it's kind of nothing like what it is back in Australia. But the reality is that, you know, you do actually have a connection and some understanding that I would argue that people from other countries, particularly Europeans, who are the great gourmands of the world, and yet they're very narrow in their food tastes, whereas we are exposed to so many different cuisines. That's got to make it a lot easier for us as travellers. I mean, certainly, you know, going to Japan, you know, being exposed to so much Japanese food here, it does make it.
Yeah.
Even just being able to use chopsticks well.
And even
Chinese people always seem to be amazed.
I've been in so many sushi bars in Japan and use chopsticks, and you have these eyes watching you to see whether you're going to stuff up. And when they see that you actually are very skilled at using chopsticks, they're so impressed, and they sit back and they're relaxed. And
it's
the atmosphere
easy
changes.
To be a rock star over there, isn't it?
It is. Well, I mean, they love that. A lot of countries, they love that if you show not just some genuine interest in their country, but also some knowledge and ability to connect in that way.
For sure. Active holidays seem to be pretty popular now as well. I know, Uta, you're a big fan of a cycling trip, aren't you?
No, I'm a big fan of a walking trip. Stop it.
She's a big fan of an eating trip. That's active.
I hate cycling. I hate it.
It is popular though, isn't it?
I know. All kinds of weird people are doing it. It's very strange.
Myself included.
It's actually taking over. I've noticed it's getting harder to find a good walking holiday because they've put wretched bicycles onto every route.
I actually did a cycling trip from Hanoi to Luang Prabang, and the looks on people's faces.
Were you in Lycra?
I wasn't in Lycra, but many of my fellow cyclists were.
Oh, no.
And a lot of those places we're going through, the only reason they've got bikes is because they can't afford cars.
Yeah,
and they're looking at us like, why are you cycling through here, you insane people?
So can I just ask you how long that took?
2.5 weeks.
Oh, on a bike.
He would have had a support vehicle.
Ah, not at all.
Yeah, oh, really?
Definitely a support vehicle. Are you kidding me?
Ben had one. I didn't use it.
They call them the Lao Alps.
The Lao Alps.
And it was about 35 degrees and you know, 90% humidity. It was horrendous. I just think it's a great way to see the world. I really enjoy it.
Yeah,
it brings you to a good pace.
It does, Now, what about another thing that's changed a lot is the introduction of Airbnb, which I think has massively changed the way people see the world now. Yeah, for good and bad, I have to say, but it's taken people out of hotels and traditional tourist districts and put them into apartments and houses and chateaus and castles and all these amazing different places that you could never access before.
And it's also for a family in particular. You know, it's suddenly made destinations affordable that wouldn't have been otherwise.
I was actually talking to a family just the other day who was saying that Airbnb is perfect for them because they don't have to travel with all the toys and everything that you would have to for children, because it's already at these houses that they're staying at and they can just use the other people's gear.
But you know, there's no doubt that it's opened up travel to a huge number of people who would have probably still been able to do it, but not to the same extent.
Now, guys, just to finish up, let's have a look into the future and think about where's going to be the next hotspots. Where are people going to be going in 5 or 10 years' time? What do you think?
Ben, I'm going to make you answer that question. Right, you've been very quiet.
let's put the pressure back on him.
I think, and I certainly hope, I think Southern Africa is going to be a big destination eventually. Once Australians wake up to the amazing things that are over there and the fact that it's so easy to get to, you know, direct flights from the East Coast, direct flight from the West Coast of Australia. You've got South Africa, Namibia, Botswana. Mm. I think Zimbabwe is going to change for the better eventually. It's affordable, it's interesting, it's totally different to Australia and yet has a few sort of cultural touchstones that we also have.
I think you're right.
I think it will get there eventually. How about you, Uta?
Well, there's another African destination, not as easy to access, but Ethiopia, I think, has so much potential in the way that Egypt was so popular before the security issues became foremost. in that it's these amazing culture, amazing historic monuments. The things you can see and do in Ethiopia are extraordinary, amazing rock churches, island monasteries. They're so beautifully painted, and I just love they have these full-length pictures of archangels dressed in, you know, red and blue and green and with big curly afros, and they look like the Jackson 5. I mean, you know, it's a fascinating destination.
Yeah. And there's a whole Rastafarian town there, isn't
there? There is, and... amazing coffee.
Yep.
I wasn't going to mention that.
And actually great food. Surprisingly great food. I really
Italian,
enjoy
it. Former Italian colony.
Yep.
Well, I was going to mention Australia because I think with the influx of so many foreign tourists, we're up to 8 million visitors per annum now, which is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of new hotels, resorts, better attractions. Hopefully service is going to improve. I mean, I think service in our restaurants is really good. It's not as good in our hotels.
Yeah.
The big challenge is how do we find the people to work in these places?
Right. Yeah.
But that means that for us as Australians, we're going to have access to hopefully a better travel experience. I mean, I know have not been to Uluru.
Yeah.
It's only 3 hours from Sydney and Melbourne. I don't know about you, but some of my best travel experiences have been in Australia. That's probably because I've been sending you to all these other exotic places that I haven't been to, which has made me put me at a terrible disadvantage during this conversation.
Now, guys, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much, Uta and Anthony.
Thanks, Dan.
If you'd like to read stories by me or Uta, you can find them on traveller.com.au. And look out for the 10th anniversary edition of Traveller, released in September.